welcome to The Thing About Cotton, a podcast brought to you by the International Cotton Association, known as the ICA, an association of members who value integrity and fairness and where sanctity of contract is paramount. We are your hosts, Eimear McDonough.
I'm Katie Farron.
And I'm Camille Cluzel.
Members of the ICA Women in Cotton Committee. Join us as we explore the anatomy of the cotton value chain and bring awareness of our industry through highlighting female leaders and their achievements. In today's episode, we sit down with Kim Hanna, President of the International Cotton Association, to learn about the history of the ICA and how the cotton industry is structured, as well as Kim's background and her journey to the lofty heights of being the first female president. So, the thing about cotton. Cotton is grown in over 50 countries, and 100 million households depend on cotton production for their livelihood. Quite simply, cotton is of great economic significance. Cotton farmers can sell their crop before it's even planted, and spinning mills can purchase it at the same time, meaning it's a forward-traded commodity. This is where the merchant comes in. They buy forward and sell forward, and thus create the market. But like other forward-traded commodities such as coffee and sugar, there is price volatility and intrinsic risk. To quote Shakespeare, in that way, madness lies. And madness it would be if we didn't have the reliability and transparency of the ICA contract, the bylaws and rules that provide a safe trading environment with legal certainty to both buyers and sellers of cotton. Camille, can you give us an idea of what the membership looks like and what do they see the value in?
Absolutely, Eimear. So to reframe everything, the International Cotton Association, or ICA, was established in 1841, so that's over 180 years ago, when a group of like-minded cotton merchants from Liverpool made the decision to create a set of rules under which cotton could be traded internationally. Today, the ICA is an association of members from every part of the cotton value chain. There are farmers, ginners, spinning mills, merchants, agents, controllers, consultants, insurance, and logistics companies. So the overriding value of the ICA is integrity, and its mission is to protect the legitimate interests of all those who trade cotton, whether they be buyer or seller. That is done by maintaining rules and bylaw under which cotton is sold, and by providing a dispute resolution mechanism through an internationally enforceable arbitration system. See, the thing about cotton is that thanks to the work of many generations before us, we're able to mitigate risk by doing safe business and making sure that if a member or an industry player does not abide by these rules, the entire industry can act upon it collectively.
Right, Camille. The ICA rules and arbitration system definitely has an important role to play in keeping the cotton industry running smoothly. But the ICA is more than just a regulatory body. It's also a source of industry knowledge, from complete cotton training in Liverpool to the numerous workshops held in consuming regions. It's a hub for professional development, as well as a place to grow your network. And we can't leave out gatherings like the annual trade event, a cornerstone for sharing insights, making new connections, and strengthening old ones. ICA also has ICA Bremen, their joint venture with the Bremen Cotton Exchange that is the standard of cotton quality and testing in the industry. They have certified labs all over the world and certify quality experts in manual and machine testing of cotton. ICA itself is headquartered in Liverpool, England. That may seem random, but way back, Liverpool was the center of the Industrial Revolution, especially for cotton and textiles. Today, maybe not so much. There is very little industry there, but it does serve as a neutral location to base the association now. ICA has a permanent staff and management team that is based in Liverpool and supports the work that the ICA does and its membership. It also relies heavily on the input of members and working groups. There is a board of 24 directors, and there are committees and working groups that meet regularly or as needed to ensure the smooth running of the association. These committees include a rules committee, arbitration strategy committee, spinners committee, value differences committee, and of course, the Women in Cotton committee.
Thanks, Katie, and we'll talk more about the Women in Cotton later, but let's welcome our first guest, Kim Hanna. Welcome to the podcast, and I can't tell you how excited we are to have you as our very first guest on The Thing About Cotton, not only because of the formative role you played in the Women in Cotton group, and now the permanent committee within the ICA, but because you are currently serving as the ICA's first female president.
Emer, thank you. It is my honor and pleasure to be here today. And I am so excited to actually be the first guest for this new exciting podcast.
Kim, just to get us started, would you mind sharing a bit about your own background in the cotton industry, how you got to where you are today?
I guess I started my cotton career in 1982, and I started as the secretary to Frank Wakefield when he was the director of Edward T. Robertson & Son. I had held that position for some time when a vacancy became available for the regional director of the United States. And I had already really been performing those duties for some time. So I asked to be considered for the position. But I was really apologetically informed that, I'm sorry, Kim, but there's never going to be a woman manager in the cotton business. It's a man's business. And well, we made a deal, and I said I really didn't matter much about titles, but if he could compensate me, I'd continue doing the duties. So I did, and it worked out well.
It's so telling in the fact that, you know, Frank was probably very correct at the time that he made that comment, but the fact that you would be happy to take the money, but you didn't worry about the title, I think. You know,
it was all a matter of survival at that time.
Well, I think it was more thriving. Certainly, you thrived in that position. And obviously, eventually, there was the support of men to allow you to advance your career, title or no title, and to get the experience that you needed to continue, right?
And funny enough, it was Frank as well, because he was a little unconventional for the times. And he's seen, I think, something in me that changed his mind. And he was the one who actually went to bat for me within the larger conglomerate of the company to I did receive the title by the end of the day as regional manager for the U.S. But as we all have our aspirations, my biggest aspiration really at that point was I had heard stories for a decade at least about the wonderful gathering. And it was like anyone in the cotton business went to the Liverpool Cotton Association dinner once a year. And that was my ultimate goal. So it was in 1995, which apparently they had not allowed women up until that point in the main dining area. Most of the women were spouses. So they had a women's auxiliary who had a separate lunch or dinner area. And were entertained differently than the main dinner. But that year in 1995, they allowed women on the main floor. There were four women that year, and I was fortunate to be one of those four women.
Oh, that's incredible to think that women weren't allowed on the floor. I mean, obviously times have changed, but I did a little bit of a look back in 1995 to see what else of significance might have happened in that year. And there wasn't a lot to report about women, but the things that were reported were quite interesting. One of the prominent ones was Lisa Clayton, a British woman, completed a solo sailing nonstop trip around the world. So that was really positive. But up there with that reporting was Xena, Princess Warrior, was released and became a cult classic. So, you know, and also at the same time, a referendum was held in Ireland to allow divorce. And in the same year, Playboy magazine was allowed to be sold in Ireland. And I'm not sure if there was any connection between those two happenings. It's a little bit suspicious. But the things that were reported about women in 1995 compared to what are happening today, it's a generational plus. So what was next for you on your journey once you got to the dinner and you got your title?
Made it to the dinner and got the title. In 1999, I parted ways with the time Wakefield. And it was the following year that in 2000, I opened Transglobal Inspections with my business partner, Peter Bernard. We're really proud that Transglobal has ascended and developed into one of the leading cotton controllers in the globe, and that we will soon be celebrating Transglobal's 25th anniversary.
Kim, you have such an impactful story, and I think it's so important for young women in the industry to have female leaders like yourself and Emer too, to have paved the way in terms of gender diversity in cotton. At least I know it has been for me as I've developed my career. It's amazing how you went from being told you would never have a managerial role due to your gender, which is something I couldn't even imagine happening today, to starting your own company that is now known by all in the industry. And then you fast forward to the ICA annual trade event in Singapore last October, and you were being sworn in as the first female president of the ICA. It's really amazing. I'm curious, though, how did you get involved in the ICA in the first place, and how did that role progress over time?
Oh, that's great. I was elected or asked to join the board, and then it did have to be an election in 2019. Emer and I both actually joined the board that same year. And that same year, we were tasked, I will say, with the challenge of starting an initiative called Women in Cotton. And boy, it's really become a dynamic initiative, and really happy to share that with everyone here today.
They didn't know what they were in for, Kim.
They didn't. Emer and I had known each other for quite, we don't want to say decades anymore. We say a little while. We don't like to admit it, but no, Emer and I have a very good synergy together, and it really showed when we began, I think, working together on the Women in Cotton. I think we're both really proud of what it's became today, and hopefully the impact that it's having and will continue to have on the women in our industry for years to come. But I was, like I said, elected to the board in 2019, and in 2021, my name was thrown into hat for to be elected as a second vice president. And that position actually is an ascending position where I was appointed, I guess, the second vice president, which then you progress to what is called the Finance and General Committee, which is the executive officers for the board. That consists of the second vice president. And then that is moved the following year to the vice president. It ascends to the year after that as the president. And one more year past that, as the you serve again as the past president. So it's a four-year dedication within the executive management of the board. And I am now in my third year.
That's great. That's a nice pass to it. So can you dive in a little bit about specifically the role of the ICA president, and how have your responsibilities shifted since you took that role?
I can, Cammie, because I've got to say, it hasn't been all that long ago, and it seems like to me. I mean, when I joined the board, and when Emer and I joined the board in 2019, there were no women on the board. Today, we have six women on the board, and the notion that any woman could have ever became the ICA president, even back in 2019, at that time seemed an impossible dream. I mean, it was just significant enough that we were joining the board of directors. And with that, I can only say, Emer and all of us women, we have come a long way in the last 5 years. The president of the ICA acts as the face of the ICA. When attending conferences and events, they're the figurehead. We work to communicate and promote the mission and the vision of the ICA, and to reach, do outreach missions, and to encourage membership, because primarily at this point to a lot of the spinning community, we have had a history of being a merchant, as you had said in the beginning, a merchant association. And when in 2004, when the international or the Liverpool Cotton Association became the International Cotton Association, it had a reputation for being a merchant association. In the last two decades, we've worked really hard to level that playing field. And it's our mission right now to really go out and engage some of the consuming areas and show them what value that the ICA could bring. And this is one of the duties of the president, to personally go out and convey that message and encourage in membership as well as engagement of all the members of the value chain all the way through.
So as we mentioned before, the journey to becoming president has started long before October when you were sworn in. And just to reframe for our listeners, we're sitting right now, it's beginning of April. So you've officially been a president for nearly half a year and you still have a half year to go. It's really, really a short time and you must have a million things that you want to do and achieve. So can you talk about your vision for your presidency this year, how far you've come and what are your biggest goals for the rest of the year?
Thank you, Cami. A year is such a very short time. And my predecessor, Tim North, the previous president before me, mentioned in his speech in that a year is a very short time. And I can only feel that now. It seems like we're only just beginning. I'm just coming off an outreach trip from in Vietnam. And we're wondering if maybe it would be a good idea to consider a presidency to be 2 years. Long story short, my objective through my presidency is really to work together to foster an inclusive environment for all members of the value chain all the way through, particularly bringing buyers and sellers together. But we are facing a lot of challenges in our industry as a whole. We are facing challenges bringing about with European legislation where cotton is being pitted against man-made fibers on what is most sustainable. As an industry, it's really important, and especially more now than ever, that we come together to deliver a cohesive message and that we can repeat that as a whole industry. We all our stakeholders in this industry, I don't care what part of the value chain you're in, if you deal with cotton, we need to fight this together.
100%.
Yeah, Kim, you mentioned trying to foster an inclusive environment across the supply chain. And I do want to touch on that just for a second. It seems to me like since your presidency started, you have been pretty much on the go nonstop. Honestly, I never really know what time zone to catch you in anymore when we need to catch up. Last week, you were in Vietnam, and now we're lucky to have you here in Singapore as well. And it's been so great to catch up in person over the last few days. How are you able to reach out to different players in the industry to spread awareness and to achieve this goal of inclusivity?
Well, we're being very fortunate. I travel a lot for TransGlobal as well. Earlier this year, I was in Australia with my TransGlobal hat on, and I will turn around and put my ICA hat on. And the Australian Cotton Shippers Association Board were having a meeting and put my, like I said, ICA hat on and address and give an update to the EXA board. It's I'm trying to, like I said, I do a lot of travel in my own business, but through the ICA itself, we have numerous engagements planned throughout the year. The first of which was in Bremen. I was at the International Bremen Cotton Conference in Bremen last month. We had a week in Vietnam. There is a week or week and a half being planned in India. And we will also visit Turkey. This year, I will also visit ANEA. So we'll be hopping around the globe. And at each stop, I will have the opportunity to talk to the members and non-members in those areas and what the needs are. And every stop has different concerns. And it's for us to listen and address those concerns and advise our members how we can all come together to make trading safer and more effective for the future.
Absolutely. There's nothing that can replace being on the ground and speaking to spinning mills in each of these destination markets and working together to find a way to meet their needs. With so many different producing and consuming markets around the world, I imagine it takes time and effort to find ways to make the industry efficient for all players. And I know that's a big role that the ICA can play. But can you touch on a little bit what that role is that the ICA does play to bridge gaps in the industry and find a way forward?
Well, we're working with some of the other associations. I don't think the ICA, there has to be a leader, or there has to be at least someone, I think, who is like a conductor, trying to bring and formulate ways and pathways that we can all work together. And we can do that through some of the other associations who have like-minded concerns, like the ICAC, like different portions with the ITMF. We came together with even the Wool Manufacturers International Wool Association, who has also been fighting the same legislation against man-made fibers. So when as we come across different players, we can exchange ideas and sit down and say and make plans going forward on how each one of our industries can, or our associations can come together, make a plan, and then carry it down through the networks that we have to deliver whatever action is needed or desired, and whatever message is needed to be carried out.
Kim, I have a follow-up question on that. You mentioned before that sometimes the ICA was perceived by some to only be a merchants association, but we all know that our members at the ICA are a lot more varied than just merchants. And you mentioned that you just came back from a trip to Vietnam, which is a destination market filled with spinning mills. What are the concerns of spinning mills, and what do you tell them if they say, oh, well, the ICA is just a merchants association?
Well, we've been trying to explain the value that they can have. The ICA can have them. One, I think it all starts out with the contract. One of the things that we were hearing from some of the, especially smaller spinning mills that we were able to visit, was those spinning very high quality yarns were having difficulties negotiating their contracts to give themselves a manageable contract. They felt like they didn't have the power. But in talking to them, we said knowing your trading partner is the best way so that you can create that manageable contract, the better relationships. There are many trading partners out there. So redesign your specs, find out exactly what you need, because their complaint was receiving bales slightly outside of the specifications, which they were not able to spin at all. And at that time, value differences where if it's only a small difference, let's say from a 4.9 mic to a 5.0, that value difference for our quality claim is very little and not significant if their machinery is not able to handle a 5.0 mic. So in these cases, we offered several suggestions on how they can better affect a good contract. And then they must know the ICA rules. The ICA rules, their contracts are based on ICA rules. Over 80% of the cotton in the world is traded on ICA rules, whether you're a member or not. So knowing those rules will be able to enforce the sanctity of that contract. Knowing what your options are and what your protections are under those rules are paramount. We've gave them a number of examples on how following the rules can benefit their trading, their side of the trading. We've worked very hard for the last two decades in leveling that playing field. We feel that the buyers and the consuming countries have just as many protections under those rules as the merchants, but they have to know what they are. Also, by joining the ICA, it can add value by having opportunities to know your trading partners better. You have access to ICA Bremen. If the mills have questions on how to calibrate their own testing equipment, or because some of the things that we heard were, well, the cotton we are buying, our test results are not the same as the HVI data we are receiving. It's different. Well, their equipment is not maintained in the same way necessarily as an ICA Bremen certified laboratory or a USDA laboratory. And those differences will be huge when it comes to actually making the quality calculations when you retest the cotton at destination and your calibrations are off, you're not going to get the same calibrations. So having access to quality experts at ICA Bremen brings very good value to the spinning industry.
I agree with what you're saying there, Kim, and it's really about understanding the contract that you're entering into and getting the information that's readily available. And I think, you know, all ICA members have that responsibility when they're negotiating contracts as well to understand what they're what they're signing. And it's always going to be a, you know, a point of negotiation. There are commercial interests and, you know, there are contract terms and conditions that we all follow, and that creates our safe trading environment. And I think just touching on diversity at the ICA, that, and diversity means many things. It's not just gender diversity, obviously. I mean, we've seen a big change from 2019 on the board. We have, I mean, you're a controller. You're not a merchant. So you're the first female president of the ICA and a non-merchant. So that's diversity in and of itself. We have other value segments of the industry represented on the board. We have growers, we have merchants, we have spinners, controllers. So we have a plethora of value chain participants there. And looking at what we're trying to do to advance diversity on the board, there are other things as well. I mean, we did a little bit of a touch on sustainability and traceability and you know, brands and retailers, because that's the next, you know, challenge facing all of us is, you know, what do we need to basically deal with these legislative requirements that are hitting the end of the supply chain and that we're all going to have to deal with. So what are your thoughts on what the ICA can do in that space?
Well, I think the ICA currently, we are working on setting up a brand and retailer committee so that brands and retailers can advise us what their current needs are, what they're facing in legislation. We can help them navigate our very complex supply chain and trusting what is available for the retailers to be able to trace the supply chain, because of course their fear is greenwashing and being called out, and they have to have trust in our system. On the same token, we look at, hopefully with the brands and retailers, we have a very good safe trading mechanism here, which the textile manufacturers on the other side do not necessarily have. We've began engaging with few, which are finding interest in it, because at the end of the day, they want everyone to know that they are a reliable and social worthy company that is concerned with not only social and economic responsibilities, but also sustainability. And so if we can work together from field to fashion, I think our industry will be much stronger. We are also working to develop a sustainability committee. And through this, there are many different traceability and sustainability avenues and companies that are coming forward. And I think we have to find our way and listen to them and listen to what we can do to provide, to gather more trust within the systems that are being created.
Yeah, and we have MOUs as well with different cotton associations globally. And I think coming together to tell the good cotton story and explode some of the myths that we're constantly hearing is really important, because as we know, we're not competing. It's a pre-competitive story that we need to tell. It's cotton versus man-made fiber. And we really need to be on the same page with that one. And I think the ICA has a very strong leadership role, and particularly what you've been talking about through your travels in the last 6 months and for the next 6 months as well, in managing the outreach to show what leadership ICA can provide in this space.
No, this is where we are at, because of course it takes resources to be able to do that. It takes human resources and financial resources. And as the ICA, we currently just don't have the capacity, I believe, to take 100% leadership on that. But I do believe with some additional help, and we're looking into the feasibility of getting additional help now for an outreach coordinator who can help orchestrate amongst the other shareholders of the cotton industry and the other associations. And this is where I was talking to you, coming together, developing the story at the top with the people, and then filtering it down through all of our networks. And this would be regional networks and sustainability networks and, yeah.
Yeah.
Governmental networks. We all need to be saying, working on the same cohesive message.
Yeah. And there's lots of room for people to get involved with ICA. We have a lot of committees. We've had a couple of new committees formed in the last 12 months. Women in Cotton is a permanent committee now. So there's always an opportunity to put your hand up and help support this cause. And The other important initiatives that the ICA is working on, particularly around diversity and making sure that all voices in the value chain are being heard equally. And I think that's been really important for us as women in cotton to be able to, you know, support the ICA and its mission by, you know, creating this podcast, and particularly by having you on as the first guest in our very nervous first interview, first podcast. And we know how busy you are, and we know that you've been traveling insanely in the last few months, and we really appreciate your time today. And before we let you go, just one more question. And in keeping with the theme of our podcast, we're going to ask our guests this on each episode. What is the one thing about cotton that you'd like people to know that they may not already know?
I really think, ladies, that there is so much misinformation about cotton out there. And I think it developed maybe from the oil industry in the first place and their financial investments in polyester. The oil industry is hard for us to fight. They have a lot of money. So along with the environmental concerns, they've had a head start on us on spreading disinformation. And for so many years, cotton just stood still and let it happen. And so the information was out there, and now it is repeated. And so when you Google something about cotton, you only find negative information. And we're going to have to work really hard to change that, because the information is, much of it is untrue. There is some very good information out there done by the Transformers Foundation. They have a paper done on dispelling misinformation. The ICAC is currently doing a wonderful job at communicating the positive and correct information that needs to be out there. So as an industry, this is one of the things we do need to come together. And when anyone who is a stakeholder in cotton, when we see some good information that's solid and positive, share it on social media, share it in your personal networks, so that the message gets out even beyond our industry, because it's going to be the consumers at the end of the day who are going to be making the decisions on whether to wear cotton or whether to wear plastic. But with that, I can't thank you enough. This has been so exciting for me to be able to be here today. And you ladies are wonderful. I wish you all the best in this great mission and the podcast. It's a wonderful idea. I wish you all the success in the world. So thank you very much for what you're doing.
Thank you, Kim, for sharing your story.
Okay, that's amazing. That was so good to record our first episode of our podcast and to have Kim joining us, particularly given the 2 weeks of intense travel she's on at the moment. And look, I have to say, for me, you know, it just showcases how far we've come as women in cotton since 2019.
For sure.
You know, not really knowing our place and how we could have impact. And then to have Kim as the first female president, it's just that hearing her story as well shows how far women have come in the industry. You know, we talk about the dynamic of women in leadership, and, you know, we've just listened to how she's managed to work her career into owning her own business, or being recognized first as a female manager, which she was never going to be, owning her own business, and then becoming the first female president of the ICA. It's just so heartening.
I totally agree.
And also for the passion that she has for the outreach work is, you know, I just love hearing that. And you know, we all know how hard she works to do that. And it's very much heartfelt for her to make sure that we have more deeper inclusion throughout the supply chain. And it's not just for the, you know, the gender balance. It's for just including every part of the supply chain and giving everybody a voice. So I'm so glad we're doing the podcast and that she was our first guest. What did you think, Kim?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It makes me really, really proud of the work of women in cotton in general and broadly speaking. There was a lot to unpack in her message, and I feel like hopefully people who are listening are feeling left with a better understanding of the ICA's mission as a whole. It was a very well-rounded message. There was a lot to unpack, and I particularly liked that she put the emphasis on the responsibility that we have as an industry to tell the good cotton story. We've said that a few times, but it's important because there's a lot of bad press around cotton and we're up against various other fibers of choices, and we really have to tell that story. And there's, again, so much myth that we have to debunk around that. And I think that in a way, this is how the podcast fits into that mission of the ICA, and hopefully that we can get that message across. What do you think, Katie?
Yeah, absolutely, Cam. I think Kim has already done so much in her first 6 months as president to spread the good story, as you say, and breaking down walls that may have previously been up in our industry. One of her main visions that she spoke quite a bit about is that she wants to increase diversity and inclusivity in our industry. And she's already done that in her 4 years on the board with starting Women in Cotton, which started as a group, now as a committee with Emar. And now she's even speaking about expanding to include a committee with brands and retailers and talking about common interests that the cotton industry might have with even the wool industry surrounding legislation about man-made fibers. So I just love the work that she has been able to do in even just 6 months regarding gender diversity and inclusivity across the entire value chain. And I can't wait to see what else she's going to do in her next 6 months.
Mm. And as we all know, the more diversity you have, the more innovative you can be. And it sounds like we have an uphill battle against, I think, what are we now, 22% or almost 22% of global fiber is cotton versus 74%+ man-made fiber. So we definitely have a story that we have to tell. It's an imperative for the industry, really. And hopefully this podcast will educate people and inform them, people who are not in the industry, you know, about what happens and, you know, what sustainable fiber we actually are representing here. So yeah, and there's a lot to unpack in Kim's, and my goodness, we have an awful lot on our list of episodes that we'd like to cover. So yeah, really looking forward to it.
Can't wait to do that with the two of you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks so much for listening to this first podcast, the first episode of The Thing About Cotton. We hope you learned a bit about the structure of the cotton industry and the vital role the ICA plays. So stick with us going forward to learn more about the ins and outs of the cotton value chain.
Catch us next time when we dive into cotton farming practices and how they differ around the globe. If you want to learn more about today's episode or have other questions about the cotton value chain, feel free to email us at podcast@ica-ltd.org.
And don't forget to like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google, and follow the Women in Cotton group on LinkedIn and Facebook to find out about our upcoming podcast episodes events and engage with men and women in the industry. A special thanks to the International Cotton Association for giving us this platform to deliver the podcast, and thanks again for joining us.